Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
In November 1959, a quadruple murder shocked the small farming community of Holcomb in the western plains of Kansas. The Herb Clutter family was slaughtered, and after an extensive investigation and manhunt, two Kansas State Penitentiary parolees, Dick Hickok and Perry Smith, were arrested, tried, convicted, and put to death for those murders. The crime caught the eye of Truman Capote, who traveled to Kansas with his childhood friend Harper Lee and eventually published his book In Cold Blood in 1966. The book and the subsequent movie have shaped the narrative of millions of readers and viewers throughout the years about this horrible crime, but did Capote tell the full story? I'm joined by Gary McAvoy, whose new book, And Every Word Is True, is now available wherever fine books are sold, and we'll tell you specifically how to buy it throughout the program here. Gary, if without Truman Capote, would anyone outside of Kansas even remember these murders in 2019?
It's not likely, Brian, and certainly not to the degree of Capote's influence. There was a few years earlier another famous murder spree carried out by Charlie Starkweather, and that's fairly well known by crime enthusiasts and law enforcement people without any major book having been done on the subject. I think In Cold Blood set the bar for that.
Well, your book's title, And Every Word Is True, pulled that right from Capote, right?
I did. When In Cold Blood came out in 1965, a reporter for Newsweek named Nancy Gunderson was interviewing Capote at his home on Long Island, and she asked him what the book was about. He responded, "In Cold Blood is the story of these six people, the Clutters, who died together on November 15, 1959, and Perry Smith and Richard Hickok, who were hanged April 14, 1965. My book is the story of their lives and their deaths. It's a completely factual account, and every word is true." So as I began digging deeper into my research, discovering that, in fact, every word wasn't true, I thought that would be a fitting title, especially combined with the fact that every word in my book can be supported as true.
Well, this book not only tells things about the story, but you're intimately involved in this. So how did you get involved in this case almost six decades later?
Well, Ron Nye, who is the son of the lead field investigator for the Clutter murders, Harold Nye, approached me to sell two signed first edition books and two letters that Truman Capote had sent to his father during the investigation. Another hat I wear is as a vintage memorabilia expert. I've been in business for 25 years. But in preparing for the auction to sell these books and letters, and the other materials that Nye had with him, I discovered that Harold's papers told a substantially different story than Capote's book did, and decided that there was much more here than a simple auction. So I got involved.
So when you say papers, what are you talking about? Investigative reports?
He had copies of official Kansas Bureau of Investigation reports, crime scene photographs, other local agency reports, two personal notebooks in which he detailed just an abundant descriptions of the crime and witnesses and people he interviewed and other things about the investigation.
So the main auction items were these two first edition books. These papers and such from Nye, these were just ancillary items you would have sold along with it, right?
Right. Yeah, they were the highlights of the auction. The reports and all that other stuff were the ancillary items, and I had not even read them all, read any of them, because they didn't relate specifically to the books and letters. Well, by association they did, of course, but I just saw them as a stack of historical stuff that went with it. But the more I dug into it, the more I found differences.
When you initially get this package, these two books, these first edition signed books and these documents, what are you thinking in your mind as an expert for what's an auction like this going to bring money-wise?
We were hoping it would bring in 10,000 to 20,000. Ron wouldn't have put the items up for auction or sale if it weren't for the fact that his family had medical expenses they had to meet. And that's the only reason he needed to sell them.
So you get involved with this, you see these items, and then all of a sudden you hear from the people in Kansas. How did that come about?
Well, the Kansas Bureau of Investigation learned about the auction in the media the same way most people did. And within a few days of that press release I'd sent out, they contacted Ron and issued a cease and desist for the auction itself and demanded return of all the materials which they deemed were state property. We begged to differ, and that's where the lawsuit came in.
So you hear this, and do your ears go up and say, I don't want to be involved in this, you can take this and auction it elsewhere? Or how did you decide to dig in your footings?
No. Ron's situation was clearly authentic, and I knew the law insofar as that we were on the right path. We had done nothing wrong. I even looked into the statutes at the time, and agents were permitted to retain copies of their notes and of their official reports and of their personal notes. So we were doing nothing wrong, and we proceeded on that.
So you describe several, well, the meeting I remember you describing in the book was at the office of, I think, the Washington Attorney General, where you're located.
That's right.
State of Washington. And there's more folks in there than probably come through most offices during the day. And then there was a whole slew of people on the phone from Kansas. What, that had to be just a crazy setting.
Crazy is the right word, Brian. I was shocked. With 13 people in our room at the offices of the Attorney General for the state of Washington here in Seattle. And I believe 7, they said, in Kansas on the other side of the speakerphone. And that meeting lasted 4 hours, during which time we went over every single page. The I believe it was the Deputy Attorney General for the state was literally reading each page and describing each page for the next 4 hours to make sure that the packet that I had sent to copies I had sent to Kansas were exactly what was in the whole set, the whole pack.
I would think, just as a layperson, that what would upset them would be the crime scene photos getting out, just to protect the family. But what do you think was going on here with KB, the Kansas Bureau of Investigation? Why they were so interested?
They were very concerned that the crime scene photos would get out, and as it happened, we decided not to sell them. And in fact, returned them to the state of Kansas for whatever disposition they wanted. But we struggled with that decision because even though they were part and parcel of Harold Nye's archives, I was very uncomfortable with the fact that they could be let out. And I discovered in my research that there was a cultish fascination for this kind of material, and that really firmed up our decision not to sell them.
The documents themselves, the story that Harold Nye told in his reports that he had kept, what was some of the things that stood out to you that differed from this narrative that we've come to know for the last 60 years?
Well, there appears to be the influence of a third party, simply by the name of Roberts, that met with Perry Smith and Richard Hickok at a little cafe about 25 minutes from the scene of the crime, right after the Clutters were murdered. And there in my research, we found lots of evidence that supported this meeting and other elements that didn't add up to just Dick and Perry murdering an entire family of four for $40.
The story that I always knew in my mind from reading the book and seeing the movies over the years is that there was a prisoner who had instructed Dick Hickok that this Clutter farm had a safe where Herb Clutter kept $10,000, and that's always stuck out. It's a very simple, tidy explanation, and I don't remember who said it, but they always
Floyd Wells.
There we go, William Floyd Wells, about the tidy explanations. They're usually wrong. That's kind of what was going on here, right?
Yeah, Wells. Well, he was a bunkmate to Richard Hickok at the Kansas State Prison at Lansing, and he drummed up this story that there was $10,000 in a safe that Herbert Clutter kept behind his desk at all times, And there was no safe. There was never a safe. There may have been a safe in a prior home he had, Clutter had, but Wells was only working for Clutter for 7 months. And in fact, he claimed that he knew the layout of the house itself and where each family member slept, but the house wasn't built when Wells was working for Clutter. It was in construction and no one had moved in, and it was far from complete when before Wells left. And that's one of the more curious finds that stands out in Capote's book that is simply wrong.
Well, and Wells, there was a diagram that was purportedly from Wells, but there would have been no way that he could have drawn that diagram, but we've all accepted the fact that he drew it, right?
Right, that's right. Yeah, there's no way he could have known what the house's layout was like. That's been established in my research. And putting all the dates and time, it couldn't have happened. It had to be somebody else who was familiar with the house and knew the family's schedule and where they slept, et cetera.
I'm chatting with Gary McAvoy. His new book is And Every Word Is True. Newfound evidence reveals Truman Capote's In Cold Blood is not the end of the story. The book's available wherever fine books are sold. Gary, one of the things that also stood out to me from this book is the way that the Kansas Bureau of Investigation, I don't know, and maybe I'm wrong, nobody had a negative feeling about them and about their investigation until you started digging around. Is that a fair statement?
That's the real question, one that had all of us, even our lawyers, scratching our collective heads. After dealing with the state of Kansas on this matter for well over 6 years, I still don't have an adequate explanation for why they fought so hard to prevent that nice material from being published. Maybe it was to prevent potential embarrassment or long-standing agency pride for having handled the investigation in first place, or maybe others. But their level of intensity is still a mystery.
And what age of the people are you talking to when you're talking to the KBI? Because none of these people were alive then, right?
Nobody in the KBI or in the state of Kansas government today was alive at that time, no. This next month will be 60 years since the murders. The investigation was, of course, something about 10 months long. So nobody today even knows much of the story except those who have read In Cold Blood.
Couldn't KBI have just come in here at the outset and bought these auction items, given you 20 grand, and you'd have walked away?
And there's the irony. Had they simply purchased the entire lot for, say, 10, 20,000, they would have easily gotten everything they wanted without having to slog through the 4-year lawsuit that cost both of us and them considerably more. They had something like 20 attorneys working on our case at one point.
I remember 3, 4, 5 years ago reading a story about this in the Wall Street Journal, and I sat up when I read it in your book. There's a story behind how that reporter got involved with this story, right?
Which reporter?
Kevin Hellicker? Kevin Hellicker at the Wall Street Journal.
Yes. Yeah, he was, I believe someone approached him who had the Richard Hickok's handwritten letters, some 200 of them, they had written to a journalist who was had interviewed Hickok during the time of his incarceration. And Kevin came into possession of these letters and shared them with me as I shared Harold Nye's materials with him. And the two of those archives together really gave us a smoking gun of sorts.
Well, and the fact that you sent these items to Hellicker in the first place, that was more for your own protection than anything at that point, right?
It was, yeah. Yeah, well, as things started heating up in those early days when we knew we suspected there was a lawsuit coming, having seen enough movies where people take out insurance policies of some sort, I decided I better send a copy to a respected reporter who would be a third party and out of the mix of what was going on with us. And it turned out that Hellicker himself lived about a mile away from Richard Hickok's farm when he grew up in Kansas. So he was very close to the story itself, and had written in the Wall Street Journal 3 separate pieces about the work we were doing.
But I think you were even more nervous that somebody was going to show up and just take these from you by force, right?
Oh, there was substantiation for that. They said, we're coming out. So an agent will be at your door at 9 a.m. on Monday. We just want to see what you have. Well, this was before the meeting at the Attorney General's office, and that's what instigated it. So I would not allow an agent to come into my home and have at it with whatever he wanted to see. So we arranged the meeting at the Attorney General's office as an accommodation for that.
The writings of Hickok, how much can they be trusted in your mind?
Well, Hickok undoubtedly had the earmarks of a pathological liar in his psychological makeup. That much has been determined by professionals. But much of what he had written was corroborated by official KBI reports and Harold Nye's own personal notes. Specifically, that unusual meeting I mentioned with someone named Roberts, who may have had a hand in the murders. There's still much we don't know, but Hickok's expansive writings on his and Perry's role in the murders, some 200 pages, as I said, conforms in large part to the official records quite favorably.
Assuming there was somebody else involved other than Hickok and Smith, why would this fact give the KBI fits at even back in 1959, let alone now?
It's hard to say why the KBI would be so upset by what we discovered, as you say, after over half a century later. But they've long been quoted as saying the Clutter investigation was the landmark case that put them on the map. The rung on the ladder they all strived for. So I imagine they wouldn't want anything to diminish the shine on their star. It may be as simple as that.
And, of course, I can tell that you took some great pains in this book trying to decide what to reveal. There was a revelation you made about Herb Clutter that I'm not going to mention and spoil it, but there were certain things that even after this long, you as the author probably took great pains to say, does this really need to be out there?
I agree. Yeah, no, I was very, very sensitive with that revelation you're speaking of, and other material. My intention was not to walk on in cold blood. It's a masterful work. It was almost a byproduct of my own work that it held Capote's work in contention. But
there was a point that you had to have decided that this no longer goes from me being the story to now I'm going to tell the story on page. When did you decide there was a book in you about this particular event in your life?
Well, Ron and I actually were going to write a very different book. Excuse me. We discussed about writing his father's involvement in the famous murder case even before we'd launched the auction for his materials. That would have been a book describing old school investigative methods compared to, say, the technological advances of fighting crime today, relying on Harold Nye's keen mind as the foundation. But when I came across so much contradictory details of the investigation as compared to In Cold Blood's way of telling it, well, I couldn't not write about it. It was that compelling.
And then now, I mean, people have written about this case for years, and I've never read a book like this, though, about it. But now you're in that genre of true crime, basically a true crime journalist. Is that open your doors to a lot of other people who are in that area and that arena and that now want to be either pals with you or compadre with you, that you're part of that genre now?
There are a lot of people that who read my book, and because they're true crime devotees, loved the whole thing about it. I am not a true crime aficionado myself. I simply don't follow true crime. This was a one-off for me. I thought about putting out a second book that describes Perry Smith and Richard Hickok to some extent. A lot of things that people don't know about it, but I'm reluctant to do that for kind of jumping on to this particular story, where I think I'm pretty done with it by now.
All right. Tell me about the website, because there's a password in the book that people can go look at interesting stuff, but tell me about the website where you can buy the book.
Yeah, I've got a website that inside each book there's a password that readers can log on to GaryMcAvoy.com, and they, I call it the evidence room, and there's six or seven different types of additional material that users can review, and it really assists the readers in visualizing the story much better. There's a map of the route that the killers took from their home to the Clutters and where they picked up the materials they needed to carry out the crimes. But the book, as you asked, can be purchased anywhere books are sold, Amazon for Kindle users, Barnes & Noble, your local booksellers are always a good start. Or you can go directly to my site and buy signed copies.
And I told you before we started the interview, this took me about 2 hours to read straight through. I don't think I even got up off my chair. It's just an absolutely amazing book. The book is, and every word is, and every word is true. Newfound Evidence Reveals Truman Capote's In Cold Blood Is Not the End of the Story. The book by Gary McAvoy. Gary, just fantastically interesting book here. For a one-off, it is absolute masterpiece. And I thank you for joining us today to talk about it.
Thanks, Brian. My pleasure.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.